Guys.
Oh, did somebody already hit start? I think. Are we going?
I think I can see the viewers. Hey, guys.
Millions
of people worldwide.
Millions of people are tuned in to us today.
Live MPP hour.
Where,
got the stream going.
Where are we?
Last time I checked, we're in, building 20?
Microsoft Campus.
Yeah, Redmond, Washington.
The mothership.
Yeah. Studio B.
So, Clint Wyckoff.
Emil Cabot.
Dave Kuwila.
And we're going to have a live MVP hour chat. We've got the Twitter stream going right here. We've already got the questions are rolling in.
You guys put your chairs up, so now I look right little.
No.
Emil, are quite short, though.
Emil is quite small.
Do you need me to turn?
The more that I lean forward.
There we go.
Yeah. What a brood
guys,
we are.
Guys, we got questions to
answer.
All right. Okay. So, you know, we got a lot of things coming in here on the Twitter stream. You know, the first one actually comes in from Rick Byrne.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we know Rick,
right?
Yes, yeah, I do know
and,
Rick.
You know, what are the upgrade options?
He wants to know what the upgrade options are from Windows 2012 R2 to 2016.
I have an opinion on that, but let's, Emil, do you want to take a first crack at that?
Sure. First question for Emil.
So, you can, no.
Know what?
No, I don't know. I don't upgrade server operating
Absolutely.
Systems.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The
number one rule is, you know, build net new. You know,
squeeze in more. You're like off the screen.
One of the cool things, though, that's coming within failover clustering is the ability to, you know, do rolling upgrades of your cluster environment.
Oh.
And it'll actually give you the option before it fully commits to that upgrade. You know, this is just for the failover cluster, right? It'll give you the ability to roll back if maybe things weren't going well for you. But I think to answer Rick's question there is the first takeaway is you don't want really best practice to upgrade Windows Server.
No, and I've never really been a big fan of that at all. There's just so many things that can go wrong crossing over your OS platforms.
Right.
And those servers have been running for an awful long time.
Maybe the application that you're running on there
is old.
Isn't compatible with, you know, the new.
But now, having said that, I was looking in through MDT 2013 Update 1 just a couple of episodes ago with Dave, and there's a new task sequence in there that's a standard server upgrade task sequence.
So that's the deployment toolkit, right?
Yes, that's inside of the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, a free tool. But I've never, ever seen server upgrade anywhere before.
So if you saw it in there, are you saying that it's a recommended best practice?
Absolutely not, but I am saying that it looks like they're actually looking at...
It's there. Somebody made it a best practice.
A little better. You know, the new upgrade process for Windows 10, we've all gone through that a couple of times, works really, really well. Who's to say what's going to happen down the road, 2016, 2017,
right.
2018, right?
Well, I think it depends on how Microsoft is fundamentally going to keep treating the operating system. And if they start treating it almost like in a layer cake approach where pieces of the operating system can be compartmentalized, removed, added, and stuff like that, who knows? We just don't know yet at this point in time.
Right.
So my stock answer, my take on this, is that I think that you know, a clean install is probably the safest bet, depending on what those workloads are.
So I think, you know, that we can all agree to answer Rick's question there is, you know, best practice is don't upgrade, just build new, migrate.
Unless you're looking for job security.
Yeah, it could be a resume generating event.
That is.
Yeah, RGE. Yes. This question actually comes in from our good friend Alan. Remember Alan?
Yes. Arkin Rafwe.
Our author of Patch Solution.
Yes.
And soon to potentially be PowerShell MVP.
Yes.
We hope.
We hope, just as I'm moving towards, you know, the Hyper-V and cloud and data center management MVP. So
what is his question?
So his question is, you know, what type of storage systems are people using in the environment? Like, what are you seeing out there in the field?
I'm all for hyper-converged. It's small, it's powerful, it's fast. All flash architecture, your storage node, your compute nodes, all of that in one 2U appliance, getting a lot of uptake these days. Dave, you've been pretty much heavily involved in nothing but hyperconverged for the last year or so. How's it been going?
It's been going really well. I think one of the big thing is you have to look at the specific use cases around what you're going to be using your storage for in the data center.
Right.
And so very specifically, we've been seeing a lot of uptake for that for those hyper-converged units that you've been, that you're talking about, Emil, in specific use cases for SQL Server.
VDI.
So SQL Server consolidation, VDI.
Yep.
And I'm starting to see customers moving towards their kind of wholly consolidated data centers.
Right, because what's driving this is the fact that they've had these highly virtualized environments now. And you know, the nice things about virtualization is how fast it allows you to scale out. So they've had continuing to virtualize more and more.
Switch over this way a bit.
More and more applications.
Get a but little they, closer.
But they have yet to upgrade those storage solutions to support those VMs. So now
yes.
those legacy storage devices that they have are coming up on maintenance renewals. So there's hardware refresh cycles. So these all-flash devices, hybrid arrays, hyper-converged solutions are really gaining momentum. The price of SSD, solid-state drives, is coming down. Folks are
way down,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can either use, you know, iSCSI, Fibre Channel, SMB3. There's lots of different ways that you can connect to these and consume the storage. But as Dave mentioned, making sure that it matches the business case.
Yeah, and I mean, what we're seeing, especially with organizations that made a heavy investment into a SAN deployment a number of years ago, you know, these 1-2 rack storage arrays, when it comes up time for renewal for all of that hardware, it's very attractive as far as pricing is concerned to be able to compare these hyper-converged appliances over just the renewal of the existing SAN.
Absolutely.
Right.
All right, what do you got for our next question? These are coming in pretty fast.
The Twitter stream is moving so fast that I can't even keep up with it. So it looks like the, let me see here. Let's talk about, you know, Rick actually had a follow-up question talking about, you know, Hyper-V replication performance impacts. Is there, you know, what do you guys have to say about that?
So the answer is, as always, it depends. It depends on how you've configured it. So with Hyper-V replication, you can use a native built-in Hyper-V replication, and you can replicate asynchronously in increments as low as 30 seconds.
Right.
So you can do up to 30-second snaps over asynchronously over to your other data centers. You can even send that out to, you know, Azure. And there's other options available from, you know, some of the other vendors
sure.
as well.
Yeah, the next question is coming in from Scott from New Hampshire.
Okay.
So Scott has a question about, you know, are containers going to replace virtual machines?
That is such a great question,
it's
Scott.
A loaded question.
And I know, and I'm glad he asked that question though, because there's a lot of confusion. Would you guys agree? So we'll step away from Scott's question for a second. Would you guys agree with me that there is an awful lot of confusion around containers
right.
and their use case in the industry? I see a lot more uptake on NanoServer
Absolutely,
than I
yes.
do on containers. And I think that a lot of people are still trying to figure out the use case and the place for containers, because you can do a lot with containers. But in my opinion right now, I think there's a really strong potential for like IaaS web server front ends
yep.
and stuff like that inside
DevOps,
of containers.
Rapid deployments, agile
yes.
Development environments where folks are trying to.
Where you
to
can just tear it down and throw it away, almost like a commodity piece of hardware,
absolutely.
Right? So it's a commodity virtual machine. If something blows up, just throw it away and spin up a new one, right?
Sure.
And so, man, it's a real bone of contention in the circles that I run in, because a lot of people are struggling with, you know, the active use cases for that right now.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, as the solution gets developed heavier, we may see some use cases. But right now
it's a Gen 1 technology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that's still on the drawing board right now. And I think, in all honesty, from what I've seen throughout my career, Gen 1 technology innovation is spurred by customer demand. So it's what the customers are actually demanding out of that. So that first wave of customers that are going to actually use the technology, they're going to be the ones that are really going to drive a lot of the new innovation, because they're going to come up with the ideas, use cases, best practices, stuff like that around it.
Now, speaking of customer requests, I see a question here that I've seen, I think, over 4 weeks of MVP hours here, and that's about one of our favorite new features of Hyper-V, Dave. That's nested virtualization.
That's amazing. So you know, this one's actually coming from Sanjay down in Florida, and his question is, you know, why would you nest Hyper-V.
And so, well, nesting Hyper-V is so critical for lab environments.
Absolutely.
And so now it's available for us, by the way. And thanks to Ben Armstrong and the Hyper-V product team for making it available. It actually came out earlier than what we thought it was going to be getting released, because we thought it was going to come in server platform first and then. And so hopefully they'll port that over to server
soon. Yeah, so in the latest Windows Insider release of Windows 10, you know, folks can go out there and make their machines eligible to receive the Insider previews very easily. Supports nested virtualization, so you can run Hyper-V on your laptop, or, you know, so for lab environments, just for testing right now. You know, one of the greatest use cases for Hyper-V that Microsoft is targeting is being able to run Hyper-V on top of Azure.
Yes, so I think that's really what's driving that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It's something that folks have been looking for and asking for a long time. So the Microsoft, you know, devs and R&D team are definitely listening to what the industry wants.
And that's actually pretty amazing that Microsoft released nested virtualization for the Windows 10 client before they did the server operating system. Just goes to show how versatile and how feature complete they've made Hyper-V between the client and the server with Windows 10 Server 2016.
And remember, the core code base that you have, and we talked about this in one of the earlier episodes, Clint, is the core code base of Hyper-V is going to be the same across Windows 10. It's going to be the same across Nano Server, Core, Full GUI. It doesn't matter. It's the same core set of code and binaries that are in there across the deck.
What else do we got?
So here's a really great question that's coming from a good friend of mine, Ari in New York. So he's a colleague of mine. And Ari's question is, what is the biggest hurdle a customer might face in trying to replace their current hypervisor with Hyper-V?
Oh, I would say from what I've seen, it's user interface. Just the process. It's things are a little bit different between VMDKs, VHDs, with your VMware environment. It's all on that one file. Hyper-V, we have XML files as well that go along with it and separate out, you know, your machine from the actual
configuration.
Exactly.
I would say it's probably user interface. User interface.
Just different nomenclature.
Yes.
Right?
It is, but it's the user interface discrepancy. So in Hyper-V, if you look at the traditional management tools and stack that we have, you need a separate tool for Failover Cluster Manager. You need a separate tool for your Hyper-V Manager. You need a separate tool for your System Center Virtual Machine Manager.
Sure.
And the list goes on and on and on. Third-party tools like Five9 Manager are very affordable, and they really bridge that gap.
Yep, they do.
And so strategically, I've actually seen that slid in a pre-sales capacity, where when you're doing demonstrations of both platforms side by side, you'll slide in VMware vSphere, and you'll compare it kind of with Hyper-V with Five9 Manager,
right.
And it's a lot more friendly user interface.
That's right, because when you've got Hyper-V and you're not using Virtual Machine Manager, although you can add in different Hyper-V hosts inside your Hyper-V Manager, you don't really have that centralized view like you do in vSphere. And Five9 Manager will provide that if you don't have a VMM environment.
Right. Yeah, we're not trying to pitch the product. It just is
what it is.
There's nothing else out there like
that.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's limitations for VMM. Like, you can only have up to 1,000 virtual machines that you can manage within one VMM instance. So large, massive deployments might have issues with that. So it's just something to think about. So just trying to scroll through the Twitter feed here. What is the
I've got it up on mine here too.
Oh, you got one too?
Yeah. So I've got one from Jose in California. And so this one here is a Windows deployment question. And so what he said is, he says, what are the biggest hurdles an organization faces in moving to Windows 10? So I'm assuming he's on maybe on like Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 or something like that.
Yeah.
So what would like be the single biggest hurdle that they would face?
Again, I would have to say user interface. Just that change of the main desktop operating system that your users are using day to day. And this has been a problem for years. A lot of end users get accustomed to the way things work.
They don't like change.
So I mean, there are a few things that we can do to combat that, especially if they're going from Windows 8 to Windows 10. We can generalize that start screen to effectively mimic what they were used to.
Right. What about from a deployment perspective, right? So if folks just got done, you know, upgrading their environment and their desktops to Windows 7.
All right, we're back. We had some brief technical difficulties there.
Dave's been recording so much for the last couple of days, he filled the hard drive.
I filled the hard drive at the Channel 9 studio. I asked the girl if this has ever happened before, and she actually said no.
Never.
Never.
We've produced so much content over the course of the last 2 days that we've been yes. here at the Redmond campus. You know, we've filled up the hard drive.
While we were at break, this Twitter feed is still just is blowing up.
Slamming right now.
It is blowing up. And so while we were at break, you said that there was a question from Sim from Mississauga.
Yes. Simran.
Yes, Simran.
Yeah. Can you do a live migration from VMware to Hyper-V? What tools do people use?
So the short answer is...
live now.
Well, actually there is a way to do it. There is a company called Double Take Software.
Double Take.
And Double Take right. Software will actually allow you to take that from any platform. You can go from virtual to physical, any platform. You can go back from virtual to physical.
Well, I think Platesman can do that too.
Yeah.
I used to use Double Take as a DR solution.
No, exactly. So the short answer is yes, but there are no native tools. So you would need to buy a third-party tool.
Right.
Now, if you're looking to just do a physical to virtual conversion, then what you could do is you could use the Microsoft VM Converter tool.
Or 5.9 V2V.
Or the 5.9 V2V, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they've got a free version of that as well. So, what a great question. Great, yeah. Thank you very much, Simran.
Yeah, so you have the stream up too, Dave. Do you have any, I can't see anything coming through right this second. Let's see here.
Oh, what's that one?
Let me just see what we got here.
Networking advice for teaming firmware teaming, and drivers.
I didn't
drivers.
See that one. It just went by.
Yeah, that one was, who's that one from? Is that from Jesse?
Yeah, from longtime listener, first time MVP hour participant, actually.
Yes. Yes. So what was the question again there, guys? Because I...
How about go ahead. Recommendations for networking?
I guess I could just look at my stream here
for networking advice, teaming, firmware, drivers.
Oh, it's one
of the coolest parts of Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2. Yep. It has native network teaming. So you
use it all the time.
LACP, you can do failover teaming, you can do full support there.
I have a production network configuration script that I've used that configures the teaming, the virtual adapters, and everything that I've used on every production Hyper-V server that I have built since 2012 came out, and 2012 R2, rock solid. The teaming, from what I've seen, from moving from 2008 to 2012 and 2012 R2, has cleaned up so many issues for me. Now, one of the things you still want to be careful with, though, is that when you build a fresh Hyper-V server, that you're always getting your latest supported drivers from your vendors, your firmware
levels.
And you want to make sure that you're watching your NIC configuration settings to make sure that everything's matching up with your switches and stuff. So yes, and thumbs up to NIC teaming, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 4 hours to 4 minutes, right? Between operating system changes.
One of the other things that folks can actually take advantage of is, there's native Windows Server NIC teaming. Don't get me wrong, that's fantastic, but a lot of the, Brocade, Broadcom, Emulex, those folks out there have their own NIC teaming software as well, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that's another option.
We typically go with the native Microsoft teaming, though. So, like from a Hyper-V perspective, when we build those farms, we try to go native now.
Right. One of the other questions that came through here a little bit earlier.
While you're looking for that one, I have one from Joe. So Joe is from Toronto, and her question was, "What's it like to be an MVP?" And, just be in front of people and the community.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. The we're down here this week for MVP Summit.
What is MVP Summit? A lot of our viewers that are out there probably aren't going to know. And we actually have a lot of viewers. As you're getting to that question, thank you, viewers. We just actually cracked this week 15,000 views of our episodes on Interview with an MVP. That is just absolutely amazing. And, keep it up. We love to do this stuff. We're going to keep bringing you cool, relevant content. So back to the question. Being an MVP, Your perspective is really good because you're a first-time MVP.
Yeah.
So he's a new MVP, so had to work to get into the program.
Absolutely,
and yep. What's your experience been like just, you know, being around people, socializing in the community, stuff like that?
So it's been amazing. I was about 2.5 years or so really, really heavily working to get my MVP. You know, done a lot of community involvement, a lot of presentations, a lot of blogging. We wrote a book.
Yes, we did write a book. It's on Amazon.
Yes, Advanced Windows Deployments Using 1E Software.
If you buy it, you might be the second person to buy it.
That's right. And if you don't want to buy the book, there's an ebook you can get as well, and that'll be free if you've got Kindle Prime.
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah, I digress. The MVP program has been absolutely amazing. We're down here this week for MVP Summit. And this week, we actually got to meet with the product teams, the guys that design these solutions that we implement all the time. And, you know, they were looking for feedback. So we had that opportunity to say, yes, we like this. This works great. Or, you know, this is horrible. Looks great in concept, but once we get it in the real world, there's no use cases for it. So, you know, let's go back and take some time and development on that. And just to be able to have that back and forth
right.
with these product teams has been absolutely invaluable.
Awesome.
So we actually had another question come through from Ken in okay. Miami. And Ken was curious, you know, what's NanoServer? So we actually did a session.
We did. We just did an episode.
Yesterday.
They're not called sessions when we're here, guys,
sorry.
Just to clarify.
Episodes. We did an episode yesterday
that's
already got over 150 hits just since we've done it.
What, are you pressing refresh on your keyboard?
No, that's the viewers. That's what they demand.
This is you guys.
We
this
have a bot you. That presses F5.
This is you guys, the viewers, that are helping us out. Because the more that you help us out watching these episodes,
yep.
the more that it motivates us to bring you more relevant
content. So, you know, NanoServer is the new headless option that Microsoft's going to offer. It's going to be very, very, very skinny deployment.
Yep.
Less than 500 megs for the operating system.
Yeah, when you think about that, traditional Windows server with the GUI is over, you know, 10, 15 gigs. You know,
how many floppy disks is that?
That's a lot of floppy disks. We're aging ourselves. You know, we talked about this yesterday.
450 or so floppy disks.
What's a floppy disk?
Yeah. So, it's a very, very skinny deployment. You know, traditional Windows server is very, very large. It's a smaller attack footprint, less service patches, less hot fixes, less reboots.
Quick backup, quick DR.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic. It's coming in Windows Server 2016. Right now it's out in TP3.
If you haven't downloaded it, you need to play with this.
Yeah.
This is one of the new hot technologies that's going to be coming in Server 2016. You need to check this out.
It's pretty game-changing. You know, it has me excited, really excited. I've done a lot of, you know, demoing of it and testing in the lab environments as we did yesterday live. We showed
yep.
how you can actually deploy
a four-node
Hyper-V cluster. And
in less than 15 minutes, hey, Dave?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it literally exactly. took just from the time you start the PowerShell script to scroll through that and you're back up and running, you know, really, really, really quick, and your setup time is minimal. So, Great question.
Great to demo. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Since I was chatting there, I didn't actually have a chance to keep up with the feed. So, you know, let's see here. Oh, this is a fantastic question coming in from Kyron. Remember Kyron? Right?
Yes.
Our good friend Kyron. You know, he's watching and he sees there your Veeam Vanguard logo. What's a Veeam Vanguard, Dave?
Oh, great question. So a Veeam Vanguard is a community award that's been given by Veeam Software. To
my employer.
Yes. And so it's basically their MVP program. So we're evangelists for Veeam. We're spread out all around the world. I think there's about 30 or 32 of us as it stands right now.
Yeah, but do you get a nice pretty crystal plaque?
That's not why we do it.
But actually,
it is a nice, pretty crystal plaque with inaugural member, and it's only good for the inaugural members. So, anybody that comes into the program afterwards is not inaugural. So that's what we get. So
that would be the
definition. It's great. It's great to be recognized by the vendors for just the work that we do. Because I do a lot of blogging. I do a lot of speaking at Veeam conferences. And stuff like that. And it's just, it's nice to actually be recognized by a company like Veeam
for the
work that we're doing. And it's not something you really go write a certification for. It's just something that, you know, your activities have to kind
based
of
based on your community engagement.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we find these products and just like Veeam, right? These products just work. So, you know, we want to take the time to evangelize them because they've made our lives easier as consultants. And our customers' lives are better because they sleep sounder at night because they know their environment is protected.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to spread the word and help other people out as well. And, you know, Dave works fast, but we can't really hit everybody. So this is a great way to let people know how these products work and why they've worked for us.
So I have a really good question that just came in on the feed. This is from Colin in Ottawa.
Colin's a really good friend of the MVP Hour.
He really is. And so this
Surfing Smith.
This question, and he's Colin from Surfing Smith. And he said, so what is your guys' take on the new Surface Pro 4?
Or even the Surface
the
Book.
The Surface Book. What do you guys think about it?
I was at the Microsoft store
today. And how hot was it? Like they can't even keep this thing on the shelf.
So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was in the Microsoft store in Bellevue Town Center today, right over the hill from, and I was checking it out, and it completely blows me away. You know, just the quality of the hardware, the device, the experience, the Windows 10, you know, the fact that it's, you know, that doesn't have the kickstand. Now, this is the Surface Book, not the Surface Pro that I'm talking about, right? You can fully dock it, take it off, draw the whole nine yards. It's the complete Surface experience, right? In the form factor of a laptop. What more could you ask for?
So there's two things that I really like about the Surface Pro 4, and I'm just going to steal your laptop here from you, Clint.
Just don't disconnect the feed, because otherwise we won't get anything else happening here.
So there's two things with the new Surface Pro 4, and the first one is it's very, very slightly lighter, mm-hmm. but what they've done, and this is little known, is they've actually rearranged the components inside the Surface, and they've made it weighted, and it's properly balanced. So now when you're standing here and holding your tablet like this, it's perfectly balanced. So although it's just slightly lighter, it feels a whole lot lighter.
So you can just hold it like this.
Exactly, and it feels comfortable. You don't feel like it's going to fall out of your hands.
Right.
The other thing is they've increased the screen size, but not increased the form factor of the actual unit.
Yep.
So all of your Surface Pro 3 components still work with the Pro 4. The dock will still fit, and they've given you an extra, I think it's a third of an inch.
Yeah, so one of my favorite features and upgrades,
the keyboard,
is the improvements with the touch keyboard. So you can see here, you know, the viewers out there, that the keys are completely 100% flush with the keyboard. You know, Microsoft has broken those out, so they're raised up, they're separated from each other, so it's easier.
Anybody that does a lot of typing will appreciate that.
Yeah.
The touchpad is bigger.
The touchpad is bigger, it's easier to use. They've made improvements with the pen, right? It's got the capacitive touch on it.
Oh, and the eraser.
The eraser, and you can actually replace the nibs on the Surface Pen now.
Yep.
But my favorite thing, right, typing in my password, pin number, right?
The biometric.
So I can actually scan my fingerprint. I have to upgrade my keyboard on my Surface Pro 3 because it's always backwards compatible too.
Yes.
That's probably the coolest things that I'm looking forward to. And as you said, it's a hot item, right? So the store in Bellevue literally just had a couple in stock that they received in a truck today, and they were anticipating them being gone within the hour.
Yeah.
So it's on backlog, right?
Only one word I have for that is game changer.
Absolutely.
You know, Microsoft has
That's
now
two words.
Microsoft has now stepped into the hardware realm with desktops.
Yep.
And they're making a big splash there.
And even, you know, the latest and greatest with Windows Phone, right? So there's a lot of buzz out there about the Continuum, so you can actually
I can't wait.
You can actually work on your phone, on your Windows 10 enabled device, and you can pass exactly what you're doing on your phone off to your Windows 10.
Yes.
That's right, and you can get a little dock you can get for your 950 or 950 XL, and you plug it into the micro USB port on your Lumia,
mm-hmm.
Plug in a keyboard, a mouse, and a monitor, and all of a sudden you have a fully functional computer. You can copy, paste, Control-C, Control-V. You can open up Outlook, send an email. My perfect use case is going to be I can now launch it up and then RDP into my Azure environment.
So you're telling me that the latest Lumia devices that they have out there are powerful enough to be a PC.
Yeah, it's an 8-core processor with like 4 gigs of RAM.
That is amazing.
That's more than your Surface, I think.
I mean, this is a Surface Pro 3.
I'm just waiting to run Hyper-V on that. I'm going to run Hyper-V on my phone.
Nested virtualization on your phone.
Nested virtualization. You heard it here first. Ben, whenever you see this, make sure you work that into the...
I want to run Nano on my phone.
There's a feature request.
Yeah.
Containers on my phone.
What else did they release new this year? They had the Surface Hub.
The Surface Hub, yeah. Actually, whoa. The next generation.
How about the Band 2?
The Band 2.
Yeah. Wonderful, beautiful. Love it.
The next generation Veeam Boost that we're going to have coming out next year are going to have Surface Hubs in the... So I've been told, right? We might have to edit this.
That is an announcement. That's announced.
But
that's what happens.
Now it's got to happen. Now it's got to be done.
Now it's got to happen, right?
So Surface Hubs, yeah.
If they're not there, we're all going to be disappointed now, Clint.
Yeah. So this question actually is coming in from our good friend Joe down in Dallas. And his question is about System Center Operations Manager and what are distributed application groups and service level trackers. Any idea what those are, guys? Or am I going to have to take this one?
No, absolutely. I mean, if you want to, you're working towards your cloud and data center MVP, so yeah, go for it.
So for those of you that aren't necessarily familiar, you know, the viewers that might not know what SCOM is or System Center, it's a suite of products. The component that Joe's talking about is Operations Manager, and that's the monitoring and management framework that Microsoft has available, right? So one of the things within there is you can actually group servers, applications, objects together, right, based on like business SLAs, because that's what most important to the environment, and you can create dashboards and reports that show on that application availability and its uptime, which is called a service level tracker, right? So you can create a dashboard, publish that out to a SharePoint site.
Give it to your CIO.
Absolutely, give it to, you know, your CIO. But I think we actually got a call from him a little bit earlier.
He's happy now.
Things are back up and running.
He's probably having a Friday beer.
But you can group apps, you can group VMs, you can group objects together based on, you know, their purpose, which is to serve the business.
Yeah. So distributed applications, what are they and what are their uses?
So a great use of, say, my, let's take, for example, point of sale application, right? My point of sale application is made up of, you know, a bunch of different app servers. Inside those app servers, there's services running. Those services run on my Hyper-V environment, which is all shared storage and shared compute. And it's being able to create an entire view of what makes all the components that make
modeling
up
your application.
Yeah, modeling my application.
If that SQL server gets turned off, what are the impacts going to be following upstream through the chain?
Right. So being able to report on this visually, right, run reports and see alerts and things within Operations Manager. That way, my operations team, mean time to recovery is a metric that they're measured against. How fast can I restore service? Right. Are things up? Are things good?
So, Clint, what kind of Twitter feed are you running here to be able to tell where everybody's posting from?
So, I am a huge fan of TweetDeck, and I also use Hootsuite as well.
Hootsuite, not Tootsuite, Hootsuite.
Yes, Hootsuite. And I'm not the one with the funniest accent in the room any longer, you know, because I'm hanging out with two Canadians, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Two Canadians, eh?
So
I think we got time for a couple more questions there.
Yeah, shoot. You got any? I've been chatting. I mean... Are you paying attention to the feed, or are you slacking?
No, this one here is actually not even coming from the feed. This is just, you know, having had a chance to go to the VeeamON conference and hang around a bunch of fantastic IT pros and MVPs and just, like, really smart guys over the course of the last couple weeks here. And it's going to be something totally non-IT related. This one here is going to be... Over the last 2 weeks, because we've basically been on the road for like 2 weeks straight here.
Yeah, we've been pretty busy.
And so my question is this for you guys. What was your favorite meal that you guys ate over the last couple weeks?
My favorite meal?
Yes.
You're going to be mad because you weren't able to partake in this meal.
Crab.
Crab. Cutter's Crab House.
Cutter's Crab House.
In Seattle,
yes.
Washington.
Go. And go. Definitely if you go haven't gone out. Yet, go.
But we made such an impression on the sushi chef. He served us our sushi in the shape of a rose flower, right? It was sashimi, right? I think it was yellowfin tuna.
Oh, wow.
And he served it. Yeah, it was absolutely the best sushi. So if you're out here at Redmond, you know, visiting Microsoft, Cutter's Crab House, check it out.
I think the best meal that I had was last week in Las Vegas. I got wind that we were going out to an Italian restaurant called Tiesto.
Tiesto.
Yeah.
That's a nice Italian restaurant.
And we went out to Tiesto and I
was the music. How was the music at that?
I was
at that Italian
full
restaurant
by the time we left.
Were you?
Yeah.
Was it good?
It was grand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was wonderful.
It was expensive, but it was worth it.
Yes.
Do you recall where it was for our viewers? Or do they need to Bing that?
It was at the MGM.
It was at the MGM.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably my favorite thing, though, and I'm a little biased, you know, as I said, I work for Veeam, but probably my favorite event of the entire last 2 weeks was the epic Veeam party.
That
was
Omnia.
At the Omnia at Caesar's Palace.
Hand-rolled cigars. Your choice of a suite of different cigars, and they had people there rolling them and lighting them for you. It was phenomenal.
Absolutely epic.
Yes.
Epic is a perfect term for
you
that.
Know,
but we work so hard in our career, sometimes it's good to just, you know, unwind and just chill
out. But it's
out
cool to, you know, we shared a limo with Ben Armstrong, who was virtual PC guy. It was great for me personally. I got to hang out.
I organized, actually, Super Crystal.
And I was going to say, we had our own celebrity. We had Super Crystal with us as well.
Yeah. I got to hang out and meet firsthand and interview both Ben as well as Jeffrey Snover, who is technical fellow here at Microsoft, responsible for the entire production environment of, you know, the development of Windows Server and the go-to-market strategies with that, right?
Yes, yeah.
So you should check out the Veeam YouTube channel. There's actually the interviews that we did last week.
The V Brown Bags that were
the Brown Bags.
Up there
we had
as well.
A live MVP hour at V Brown Bag.
Yes.
Yep.
We had 1,500
people in attendance,
like live people for that MVP hour.
So that was amazing. There was a bunch of us sitting down and going mad on our surfaces, you know, with the tweeting, and Dave and Crystal were up and basically as a question had come in, they would answer it for you know the 1,500 people that we had in attendance.
Yeah.
And then while we were compiling the results on the surfaces, right?
Absolutely.
Phenomenal.
It was a great event. So I, this one's actually funny. So this one is coming in from Joel. Do you know Joel Herbert?
Yeah, I do.
Joel? Yeah. It's actually, he's curious why you're wearing the sweatshirt and you're not showing off your guns.
There might have been a tweet or two that came through from one of our episodes yesterday. And so there was a tight shirt comment that came in yesterday.
There was. I mean, it was like, did you have a license to carry those guns? I mean, you were like, flexing for the camera.
No, it's
standing
it's
sideways
hey,
like this.
Suns out, guns out.
Suns out, guns out.
Guns out.
Hey,
well,
I'm my new title is the IT bouncer.
IT bouncer and
that's right.
IT provocateur and global worldwide hand model. So. Well, guys, you know, it's been fantastic. We've had a great week here at the, you know, the Microsoft campus in Redmond, Washington.
It's been awesome. It's a great way to just wrap things up.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun. It's been great producing all this content. I think we pumped out, over like 10 videos, 15 videos?
Yeah, and a huge, huge thank you once again to the Channel 9 team for giving us access.
They're staying
to
late
buildings.
For us
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's past 6 o'clock now, and the girls are still out there, you know, helping us record these sessions. So a huge, huge thank you for giving us the opportunity to record here and for helping us with the editing.
All right, so if you ever see the girls in the Channel 9 crew at Ignite or Build or Connect or any of the events that they attend live,
give them a big hug.
Big hug, high fives, you know, because without them, this wouldn't be possible.
Guys.
Keep it real.
Have a good one. You gonna stop it?
No.
Are we still on?
I think it's still going.
I forgot to tell them something. Hold on.
What?
Forgot to tell them something. #MVP hour. Follow us.
Oh, right. Every week.
Keep your stick on the ice.
Colin.
Out.